Today's show is the split between the haves and the have-nots here. NCAA tournament, will it be expanded? Oklahoma locks up Brent Venables. Some recruiting notes and McDonald's AI.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
The Ritz-Carlton Naples.
Russ Dellinger.
A handful of butter, hundreds of chicken nuggets, and ice cream loaded with bacon.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Power 4 Island off in the Caribbean somewhere.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And Ross got a little news here Monday morning. Sort of like a revolution that happened quietly. No Boston Tea Party here. Ross is declaring that the split between the haves and the have-nots in college athletics is here, at least in terms of governance. And he writes about this meeting. The NCAA commissioners all got together for one of their convention meetings things. I'm going to get to where, because you know I couldn't I feel like you were taunting me in this story, Ross.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But the gist of why we're talking it, there was a meeting between five men, commissioners of the SEC, ACC, Big 12, and Big 10, and NCAA President Charlie Baker. The other 28 commissioners, who Ross has deemed the other 28, I'm sure they like that, we're milling about them.
Well, what do you want to call it? What do you want to call
I like
them?
That, yeah, I that the you guys, yeah, I mean, you guys. they didn't even know the meeting was happening. And so basically how you, well, let Ross explain this, but I have to start with your first sentence because I feel like you thought of me when you wrote this. Naples, Florida is the dateline. Inside the beachside Ritz-Carlton Resort along Florida's southwest coast, leaders of college athletics met in a second-floor conference room to discuss particulars about the industry's future. The Ritz-Carlton Naples. This is where they went to complain they don't have enough money. I love these guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not the Statesboro, Georgia Fairfield. No, no.
By the way, I stayed about 10 minutes down the road at a lovely town place.
There
suite.
You go. And they have meeting rooms there. So this is a convent.
They also have $120 a
yeah,
night rates.
Free breakfast to get the little.
Did
they have the waffle maker? If they got the waffle maker on the breakfast.
I believe they did. I mean, yeah, and they had the little orange and apple juice machine where you push it. Squirts out. Yeah.
Fruit.
Yeah. So I stayed there at the $120 a night hotel. And yes, they stayed at the Ritz-Carlton. To add off of this conversation before we move on to more serious matters, one of the other 28 commissioners looked at me and said, Ross, why the hell are we staying here? I mean, look at this place. As a way to say we shouldn't be, right?
Yeah,
like in this certain situation, in this circumstance, we should not be staying
somebody.
Here. So that was interesting.
At a time when they're all pleading poverty, this is interesting.
It's I believe it's around $1,000 a night.
No meeting rooms in that big building they built in Indianapolis called the NCAA headquarters.
There's plenty of those.
Plenty space. In fact, I was just in the NCAA headquarters not too long ago. In there's empty space, right? Because they're down staff and they've been since COVID. So there's plenty of empty space, Dan. There.
Yeah, I would have thought I've been in that building before. I think I've been in a meeting room. I mean, we're talking 28 commissioners, and then I mean, and 32 commissioners. Obviously, they got to come with staff, right? So, but we're
not in this one. Yeah, they don't come. It's very singular. They want to kind of get away to a secluded location.
Crowds.
Wait a minute.
It makes.
Oh my God! Is that the commissioner of Mid-American Conference? Ooh, let's go rush him.
Big Northeast Conference fan here. Nice to meet you. What do you think? Can Wagner do it?
My picture. Can I get my picture with you, CAA commissioner?
Come on. Secluded.
I will say this. They will this week, this week, several of the other NCAA committees will meet in Indianapolis.
So how will they survive? How will they survive? I mean, the Steak and Shake is sitting there going, "We'll cater." I love it. At least one person noticed. Like, they never can have a meeting anywhere normal.
Yeah.
This is, I mean, we're broke. We're broke.
We might have to cut
sports. The Ritz-Carlton? you couldn't even just do like City Center, Marriott, Orlando. Uh-huh. If you had to go to, first of all, you really want to be in Florida this time? The Ritz-Carlton, Naples. It's not even easy to get to Naples. There's not a major airport. You're going to have to rent cars. I'm sure.
They go to Fort Myers.
Might have been a few private jets. Yeah. Might have been a few. I mean, this is on. Mm. They think they're the NFL owners.
There was at least one private jet that flew to Naples. Yeah. I will say that. Yes.
They think they're the NFL owners. The problem is those people are billionaires. And if they, they meet at Ritz-Carlton's. Because you can't have an NFL owner have a cheap hotel for his 24-year-old mistress to be shacking up with them. It would be totally inappropriate. It's got to be someplace really nice. I mean, I think we all understand that there's, you know, things. But a commissioner, anyway. What the hell?
This got us off the rails.
Wrote that. Thing. I opened my story. I'm like, oh, Ross has some news. I'm going to get informed this morning. And first sentence just popped me right in the face with, here we go. Thanks, buddy.
Gotcha.
All right. Go ahead. What is happening?
All right. Well, yeah, I can lay the groundwork here for what happened last week. It basically like a 3.5 day. It's an annual event every June. The Division I conference commissioners, all 32, get together and meet. It's really the only time they all get together in person and meet. And obviously, this year's meeting was, given the situation right now in college athletics, pretty significant. You know, with the House settlement and how the other 32, specifically the 22 FCS and basketball only commissioners, feel about the back pay. We got into that right a little bit a few weeks ago, and how they don't agree to the portion that they're paying in back pay. But that aside, they discussed that was a key. But I think most people, maybe 70-80% of them, are moving past to kind of the future and discussing the future. So I think, to me, two things, it boils down to the 3.5 days, that two big things were discussed. One was, which I reported right after we did the pod on Wednesday, unfortunately, a few hours after, because just timing-wise, it didn't work out for us to talk about it on the pod. But Dan Gavitt of the NCAA presented commissioners with the NCAA tournament expansion models. There's two of them, a model that adds four at-large teams, and a model that adds eight. So you'd go to 72 or 68 total teams.
72 or 76.
Tournament. 72 or 76.
We're already at 68, yeah.
Right, we're at 68. And they'll add it would probably be another first four site. The thinking is it'll be a Western, like a Pacific Coast or Mountain Time, first four site.
Dying for a second first four.
And so that's one thing I think that was significant that they did. The other thing, Dan, is what the story referencing Monday morning that I wrote about, which is the governance model. They also, not only did they present the NCAA expansion models, they presented a new governance structure for Division I. It is just a framework. It's nowhere complete. But the gist is the power conferences can pretty much do what they want. They can make their own rules. They can enforce them. And I think, you know, for years and years, the other 28, right, especially the 22, have, you know, they want, I think they want more so because they're not resourced like the power leagues. They want to preserve kind of an amateurism type of model. And they upheld cost containment rules on the Power Five, and now the handcuffs are off, so to speak, right? And the Power Leagues, when they entered into this House settlement, we knew this was coming. The Power Leagues are going to be able to do what they want when they want. Really no particulars around that, but you can imagine, like a little example that I used in that story was, right, you know, the NCAA Division I Council right now includes one representative from each of the 32 D1 conferences. So you've got Greg Sankey sitting in a room with somebody from the Horizon League, for instance. And that's just never worked. Even with autonomous powers that the power conferences have now, it's just never worked. So you can imagine a D1 council that's not D1, but a power conference council that makes power conference rules. And the other 28 can opt into those rules if they want. So that's kind of an example of what's happening. So it's NCAA tournament expansion was one of the big things. And then this governance structure. But along with this governance structure, because both these things go hand in hand, along with this governance structure, you have other ways that things are going to change because of the new model, which is access to postseason, which I think the power leagues want more of, and money. How revenue is distributed. So those conversations will be ongoing for the next several months.
Access to the postseason in everything or in?
In everything. I think that is that you're going to see conversations start to be had over not just, you know, NCAA tournament expansion, which they're having now, but volleyball tournament, softball tournament. You're going to be seeing a lot of the, you know, they in general want more access. And part of that is that their leagues have expanded, right, and consolidated. Now, as one of the other 22, 28 mentioned to me, or a few of them mentioned to me in Naples, hey, Ross, we didn't expand their leagues. We didn't force them to expand.
Nobody forced them to expand unless it was maybe the TV networks.
Right. That was their decision. But now that they've expanded, right, they do want more access. And I think we're going to see that. So there's three things here, right? Governance, access, revenue distribution. And governance, they've tackled. Access, they're tackling at least with the NCAA tournament, but you could see more. And revenue distribution is going to be an interesting conversation as well, right? Because the power leagues, as you guys know, distribute revenue, a little bit of CFP, but NCAA tournament revenue throughout. The NCAA distributes all that based on access, a lot of it. So you could see a lot of these formulas starting to change.
So there's an element basically here of, yeah, we will still associate with the other 28 just enough to have your precious basketball tournament, but it's going to cost you. You're going to have less power in the decision making. You're going to have less bids, or at least a percentage of the bids. And we're going to take more of the money because we want more of the money.
I think that's pretty accurate. And I think that, that is probably it, that has seems to have been accepted, although through gritted teeth with the other 28. And part of the reason it's been accepted is because the other option is not great, which is we're leaving. We're going to go from underneath the umbrella and leave. But what this House settlement does, right, and why they all agreed to it as one, is, as Charlie Baker said, it does preserve everybody for at least 10 years under the umbrella. And so I think their thought is, hey, we agreed to this to stay with you for 10 years. And now here's what we're asking for, or here's what we're telling you.
Yeah. So I remember saying this when they agreed to the 10 year, I think I even wrote a column. Like, I think this was actually a way to save for the temporary time, at least that period of time or something close to it, the things that fans want the most, which is namely that save March Madness, save the NCAA basketball tournament. So, I mean, there's some funny stuff here. I mean, we need more money so we can compete, but we also need to tilt the bids so that we can compete, because we're going to freeze you guys out all the money, but we still not sure we can beat you. We got to make sure we got more bids. But hey, I'm dying to see where the Power Four and Charlie Baker, when they eventually have their own meetings, what hotel do they pick?
Well, they
buy an island.
Like Fight Island.
The Power Four Island off in the Caribbean.
That is some Caribbean
like
island.
Butler Cabin at Augusta National. Like, what is more? I looked up most expensive hotel in America. It's the ranch at Rock Creek in Phillipsburg, Montana. $3,600 a night. Think they could handle that? Where are we going?
Okay.
What's we cut out these barnacles called the America East?
Well, I honestly, I think because it's only such a small group of them, I think you'll probably find that they might not meet in person a lot. They have Zooms every, I think it's every other week, the power conferences do together. So they do have the Zooms. Now I'll tell you this, you know, I'm sitting here obviously at home in DC. They have met up here quite a bit lately. This is where they've come to lobby, obviously. And while they're here lobbying Congress, they've met quite a bit, and with Charlie Baker quite a bit here. So, you know, this is
where we're at.
What was expected? This is what was expected with the House settlement. I mean, I think I remember writing this back, and we talked about it back in October when I followed Greg Sankey around for that trip. And part of the story was about how the wedge coming that will formally split the power leagues and everybody else is here. It's the House settlement. And this was long expected. And, you know, I think there were two options here. There was, well, we're going to do something ourselves, or we're going to stay with the family. But you guys have been relegated to the basement. You know, and we're going to take the top three floors, including the rooftop with the pool.
All right. So here's my thing. I'm making fun of these guys and all that. But like in general, this is how I view it. Tell me where I'm wrong, because I don't necessarily see this as a bad thing. Is it the ideal thing? Is it the magic wand thing? No. But there are realities to how this works. What I like to see is the NCAA basketball tournament and all the NCAA events have access and opportunity for all these different leagues and different, you know, you can play baseball at Maine and technically somehow make the College World Series, right? I think they actually been good at one point or another in Maine, but something like that. And certainly we keep the basketball is such a big thing, or like the hockey, the schools, random schools are really good, right? Quinnipiac won the NCAA hockey title a couple years. Denver, right? Denver doesn't have football. They're the winningest hockey program in the country. I don't want to see those programs go away. I don't want to see all the different ones, right? You have volleyball. Different sports have different things. So I'd like to see all those guys stay. The idea that I think the only way to do that is to create a system where if you want to directly pay, if Alabama football and Ohio State football want to directly pay their athletes, that's fine, but you don't necessarily have to do it at the other teams. And you say, well, that's not a level playing field, but I say it's never been a level playing field, okay? They've never lost recruits to these guys. I've heard this argument, well, once this gets going, people at like Kansas State are going to get frustrated because they're going to realize they can never win the national championship and they're not going to enjoy the sport anymore. I literally heard that specific argument like last week. I missed Kansas State's national championships. I thought I'd been following this sport for my entire life. There was that one year they were really good with, was it Michael Bishop? But then they lost. Bishop. Yeah, but they didn't actually get there. I guess I missed all those years that, like, the only reason people go to games in Ames, Iowa and fill up the stadium is because Iowa State's going to win the national championship. So I don't really care so much about all of this stuff. What I want to do is preserve the opportunity and the availability that it still makes it a competitive enterprise at as many places as it possibly can. And every once in a while, you could catch lightning in a bottle and have these dream seasons, or you could resource a certain program and get really, really good. And that's your program, whether it's Denver hockey or it's Gonzaga basketball or it's Long Beach State volleyball or whatever it is, or some of these base that we didn't have it this year in baseball, it's off, but whatever you want to do, you have that opportunity. John Hopkins, lacrosse, things like that. That's what I'm hoping to preserve for as long as possible. What I do not want to see is Fox and ESPN and CBS and NBC say, we have 50 teams in Division I and the rest of you guys are something else. So as much as there are going to be people complaining about this or whatever, and it's a little like, oh my God, they have all the power. Is this actually a step into that preservation, whether they really want, whether it's just by happenstance or not, but is this a step in kind of assuring that preservation or not? How, where are we on what I'm arguing? Tell me if I've got this all wrong and I'm missing like some side deal that's going to kill everybody.
Like you're talking about preserving access, right?
I want the sport to basically look like it does now. And I don't really care if Ohio State's paying their running back $200,000 directly. I don't really care. Are we still going to get Iowa State playing Baylor? Are we still going to get Gonzaga basketball making a run? St. Peter's still, Oakland U still going to have a chance? That's what I want to save. I don't really, we can't stop the other stuff. So are we going to keep the other parts that I, because I don't really care what happens. I don't work for a college. I don't work for a college. I don't work in an athletic department. I don't care about their money. I don't care whether they can't afford to stay at the Ritz-Carlton Naples, because I can't afford to stay. I just want to know on Saturday, am I still going to get like 70 games that are make this wild, fun part of college sports?
Right, right. I think that, I think yes, and that is a big question that came up in Naples was if we let the power leagues create their own rules, do we still compete with them? Right. That, and can we still compete with them? They've never really successfully in most sports competed with them, especially like in football or something. But they do want to, you do get the sense that everybody for the most part wants to retain the competition, whether that's with FCS or G5 or whatever. So you get the sense they're trying to preserve the competition, which is why some rules, you know, some rules have to stay the same for everyone, which is like, I talked to NCAA President Charlie Baker about this down in Naples. The playing season, the rules have to kind of, everybody has to kind of agree on the same for the playing seasons, like health and safety stuff, right? Like, gameplay, like officiating rules, like a lot of those need to stay the same so they can continue to compete. You know, what's going to be different, obviously, is a lot of legislative rules that involve benefits to athletes, most specifically the revenue sharing piece of this, right? And how most of the other 28 will probably not share revenue with athletes. And that obviously is going to grow the gap. So at some point down the line, Dan, you could see a way for that gap to grow so much because this group is not paying players, and this group is, that you probably won't have competition. You probably won't.
So the like bit would be
12 years, 15 years. Well, I don't know when we'll get there.
You're making so much money as the 11th basketball player at Kentucky that you would never go to Butler.
I mean, that you could see that happening in years from now, but I think in the intermediate, what you're asking about is they want to retain and keep the competition among each other. And for the most part, they want to continue as is the NCAA basketball tournament. I think the power leagues, as we discussed, want it expanded. They want more teams in their leagues. And for the other postseason tournaments, there's the thought that maybe the AQs should be certainly looked at seriously. Should you grant 32 AQs? So I think that yeah,
now
is
now
a
you're getting near the third row,
right? Right. Yeah. No, you start doing that, then screw it. That's when, if I were out of those other leagues, and you're going to take away an automatic bid, that's when we have pushed the envelope to the point where it breaks. So the NCAA tournament, yeah, we'll still have it, and man, we'll let most of you guys in, not all of you. I mean, no, that's a breaking point to me. As far as the other stuff, yeah, I'm less concerned about Kansas State or Iowa State getting frustrated at trying to, you know, maintain a standard of living, so to speak, within the Power Four than I am with the AAC and the Mountain West schools having no chance to compete. Now, the great news is for now, they've got an automatic bid in the playoff, the football playoff. But if they lose that, then forget it, because then you've got no chance. If you are going to draw such a big demarcation financially, and then you take away the access of at least one G5 school to the football playoff, then it's the same thing. It's like then you are excluding just for the purposes of enriching your own self.
Well, that's a good point, and it was a conversation down there, was football access. You know, they agreed to the new deal, right, which grants all the power leagues champions an automatic spot, and then the best G5 team an automatic spot. But there is a look in to the contract in 2027, and there is definitely fear from some, especially in the G5, that look in will bring an alteration that may be negative to them.
One spot.
They got to have all of them. The 11 spot. Out of 12 is not enough, Dan. We got to have 12 out of 12.
14.
And
one out of 14.
Yeah, four.
And they're going to go, well, this NCAA, okay, we're going to expand the basketball now to 76 because we have the conferences have merged. It's the same number of power teams.
Same number.
Nothing changed. Teams. You just changed the labels.
Yeah, that is such crap. I hate the idea of expanding the basketball tournament.
Oh, wait a minute.
Of expanding the basketball
There's
tournament.
More. We have fewer conferences. It's the same number of teams. Come on. I'm not falling for this.
No. This is a complete okie-doke.
It's ridiculous. That argument has zero sense. Makes zero sense. It's the same number of at-large bids. That's it. Yeah. The same number. Anyway, they're going to go to 70.
It's just more.
They're going to go to 76.
They're going to go to 76 or 72 right. So we can get more 16
And then we're
going
to have to cut. We got to cut these four, final four smaller leagues because we need four more spots.
And how's that going to go over when two of the three lowest ranked conferences every year are the HBCU leagues? That's going to be good optics. Very nice.
Well, so one other thing here, and this came up during Gavitt's presentation down in Naples, is when you add, every team you add to the tournament, you have to remove a team from the original bracket to play in a play-in game because they're going to keep the bracket, the 64-team bracket, and you play your way in like we have now. So every team, if you expand by eight, you're taking eight teams from the bracket and pulling them over to play-in games. And that was something that I think opened the eyes of some conference commissioners in the presentation. Because look, you know, obviously the power leagues are pushing this. And imagine if the power leagues, if there's eight new at-large, they're going to get seven or maybe all eight, right? Probably, I would think. So the thought is, but you're pulling out a lot of their teams who are guaranteed spots in the tournament to then play those other new teams to play into the tournament. So
doesn't work.
Is it worth it?
Well, and they go, well, we want more teams. And I get it. They run these stats. Well, very few teams make the basketball. And the division right. one is now 370 teams. The problem is
67,
all the teams that are joining have no real access. They're joining leagues that have one bid. So if you're one right. of these lower leagues, if you want to have 12, 16, 20, that increase and that decrease in percentage has no impact on the middling team in the Big Ten or the SEC or whatever. It's just more teams that are sitting there saying, we're going to take one weekend in March and hope we win this thing and get in. That's it. So the numbers are a lie. The stats are a lie on that. But your point is, I don't know how they didn't think this. The biggest joke about the NCAA tournament is they call it the first round, right? The play-in round, the first four it's not the same. It's not the same, okay? You go and play in Dayton, you fly as fast as you can to get to Dayton, Ohio. It's a night, they have a great crowd there, nothing against Dayton. Where else could you do this thing? I don't know where they're going to do the other one. But you rush there and you play this game, and yeah, maybe you win, maybe not, but it's not the same as you got the whole week on campus where you're strutting around, then you get to go to a big city and you're at like the United Center or whatever. You're out in LA and oh, hey, there's Bill Self running practice right before us and we get to play. Oh my God, there's all the lights and there's the CBS crew and I actually know those announcers and all that stuff. That's the real, you can have all these little sub things you want. It's not going to be the same. You could have four first fours, which is where they're heading to this, and America's going to mostly ignore it. The thing starts at noon. Are you in the basketball tournament or are you not? And so when they're pulling their teams that have to put them in there, you're actually taking away opportunity for the real event. You can say, and you're not even making any more money. The only people who are going to make money on this, the only people, the CBS will not pay more for first four, not much. The only people making money are the coaches and the athletic directors who have bonuses in their contracts to get paid if they get in the NCAA tournament. That's all it is. It's a game, so they get their bonus, which is considerable. Schools aren't making more money. The players aren't getting a better deal. No one wins except bottom line of the guy making the decisions and doing the most whining.
Yeah, no, I mean, CBS thinks and Turner thinks so highly of the first four that it's on true TV, right? It's, nobody watches and nobody knows what channel it is or any of that. So, yeah, you just add more of that Tuesday, Wednesday clutter for
teams. You don't even get the spotlight. Yes, it used to be a spotlight. Like, no, okay, it's the right. only game on. And so more people would watch this game because now there's going to be four of them. Are they going to put the first four on CBS? I mean, even if they do, who wants to watch this?
Well, and so you brought up TV, which is a big point here. Do they get more money? There's not I wrote it last week, but there's no guarantee in the contract that they generate or have to fork over more revenue for.
But they personally get more money. Tournament. They all have bonuses.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. With the tournament as a whole, you'd have to split the pie more ways now.
Yeah, that's the other
thing.
The pie
would not grow. Right.
You dilute the share per team.
Yeah, but this is what happened with the bowl games. This is why I used to argue they were against the playoff. Don't expand. The bowl industry must be protected. The bowl industry will die if there's a it's not gonna die. The teams go to bowl games and lose money, most of them. Right? You don't make money going to a lower bowl. I won't pick one out specifically, right? Often they lose because they got to
buy. Some of the mid bowls.
The mid bowls.
They don't make money.
Because you got to buy your band and the bowl contracts are ridiculous. You have to stay at the Ritz-Carlton or your band's got to be there three nights, all this stuff. So school lose $1-2 million on a bowl trip, but the AD and the coach get money. So they've literally figured out.
Which is you net zero out or
you
down
lose
a million.
Your school loses. Right. It's like if you work for a company and say, hey, I can get in on this deal and I will lose my company $2 million, but I get a $100,000 bonus. Well, hell yeah, sign me up. What do I care, right?
College sports. Such a great
It's a total. Those lower bowls are just ways. Christmas bonus, baby. Of course I got to make it every year. I made $100,000. We went to the New Mexico Bowl. Congratulations, coach. Like, what?
It's the bowl experience for the student athletes,
Dan. Yeah, we got a gun. Some of them were like TCU's playing like their home stadium, you know, like stuff like that, like the bowl trip. Like, wow, I'd rather go home for Christmas, man. No, this is all like the powers that be getting their cuts. I'd rather we don't expand the basketball tournament and they just use the money to pay their coaches I used to call them the welfare bowls. That's what they are. Let's just do this. Just be like, all right, everyone who makes the NIT gets their NCAA bonus. And then we wouldn't have to deal with this.
The welfare bowls.
That's what they are. They're bailed out by the conferences. Nobody makes any money except the bowl director, the AD, and the coach. And you want look in? They're looking in from the patio of the Ritz-Carlton Naples as the sun sets. And I bet it's a pretty nice sunset up there. Clinking glasses of a nice scotch blend going, hey, man, come to our bowl game next year. We'll all get rich. All right.
Good sunset, Dan.
It's a good sunset,
good
Naples.
Sunset, beautiful over the Gulf. It was nice. Okay, so one other
good thing
about,
they got to a secluded place.
Yeah, they didn't want the riffraff getting at the commissioners. They're so good.
I will say nobody in there, I don't think, knew who these people were. In fact, at one point there was a sign, you know, they put little signs out front of the meeting rooms to let everybody know this is the meeting of this group so the participants can find their way. And the CFP met there, the College Football Playoff 10 commissioners, because they were all there. So they met and there was a CFP sign out front of their room. And I saw the attendant of the hotel at one point move the CFP sign to like a corner and turn it so it's like basically facing the wall. And I thought, ah, more secrecy. They don't want people to know that the CFP is meeting in this fairness, room. Is that what's going on?
They were in Florida. Might have been an angry Seminole fan.
Florida State. Florida State. Not too far away.
I would be a little nervous running into an FSU fan as a, you're going to at least get an earful. And hopefully that's it.
Yeah.
So, how was the sunset at the Town Place Suites? Was it?
Well, I saw it set over, or something. Over the Walmart that was across the street. Right. It was a brand new Walmart, though, Dan. It's very nice. But the sun set over the W, and it was
beautiful. The W.
Over the W.
Yeah. One thing I'll add about one last thing maybe about NCAA tournament expansion. I talked about how you add eight teams, you got to pull eight teams out. There is a way where you don't pull.
You don't pull each other.
Power conference teams will know because you still need open spots in the field.
Right.
So you have to pull out somebody. Yeah. Do you pull out the AQs, more of the AQs? But here's the problem with pulling out more of the, like the 15, 14 seeds, is that there, and this was a discussion in Naples, what is their TV value? You're trying to get more money at a CBS. The value isn't as much there. And so I don't necessarily expect that to happen. You know, right now it's 50-50, right? You have two games of 16 teams seeds, and then two games of the at-larges. So this next first four, do you still do that? And that would provide, if you add eight at-large, right, and you do the 50-50 split, that would, if you pull out more of the 14, 13 seeds, whatever, it does open up space for some of those new teams that you've added to actually not have to play in a play-in game. You can fit them in the bracket the way it might fall. That is a big argument, obviously. Obviously, the other 28 are arguing, please do not take out any more of our AQs to play in a play-in game. Now, the opposite argument to that from some of the other 28 is please do that because they get a unit if they win that game against a fellow 14 seed. So it really was interesting that conversation down there. Some want it, some don't. Some are torn on it. But the sense I got was because they're trying to get more money from the TV networks. You want bigger brands to play, so you want at large teams to play at large teams in the play-in.
Only they had each conference had a tournament the week before. Where everyone could play their way in. That would, man, what an idea that would be.
Oh, you mean like a conference tournament
all over the country?
Genius.
Like 32
man.
Of them.
Genius.
Just boom, everyone play. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. No, that's, Sankey signaled this on from SEC spring meetings where he brought up NC State as an 11 seed going to the Final Four. And he said, and think of teams that were seeded higher than 10 seeds who didn't even get into the main bracket, that they lost, but maybe they could have made a run. But
poor. My heart breaks.
I the idea that we have to screw with the NCAA basketball tournament just appalls me. The other thing here with this is, like, find me the fans out there who are clamoring for a bigger NCAA tournament that say, I want 72, I want 76. That sounds great. I don't hear from them.
No, I don't know that there are many at all. And just the reaction to that story on Wednesday about the models, expansion models, I'm guessing, and again, this is just social media, but I'm guessing it's 95-5. At best, 90-10, 90% against expansion, 10% maybe for it or either doesn't care. So this would be going against the wishes of overall fan bases.
Yeah. They also don't watch. Like, I think the first four goes, I don't know, 5-6 million. It's not a bad property, but it's not considering it's the only game. You're just going to, I don't think there'll be more than 5 or 6 million people that will watch the first four, whether you have four first four sites or one first four site. I think that's just your diehard guy. All right. We'll be back after this message. Okay, and other news that everyone's broke. No, not everyone's broke. Brent Venables, Oklahoma, has agreed to a new 6-year contract, basically a 2-year extension. He already had 4 to go. But new 6-year contract has been approved, $51.6 million. He'll earn $8.6 annually for the duration of the deal. We are proactive about contracts, Joe Castiglione said, the OU athletic director. He's 16-10 in 2 seasons in Norman, which is obviously not typical OU standard. However, they went 10-3 last year, including winning the Red River. He signed 3 consecutive top 10 recruiting classes. They're heading into the SEC. Venables, I think we will see what he can do, but I mean, I don't have a problem with him getting a contract extension. But it sort of sets up OU making a pretty clear statement right away. Hey, this is going to be our guy heading into the SEC. They are going in with a brutal schedule. I think it is ranked by the College Football Network as the 4th hardest schedule in the country. The SEC did them no favors in who they're playing. This is where we're at. What do you think of Oklahoma and Venables heading into this? It's really a historic and pivotal year. Pat, what do you think of this?
This seems like a pretty classic case of a premature reward of a coach who's trending the right way, and he may end up being a great investment. But even 10-3 is fine. It's good, but have we seen Oklahoma in the playoff in a while? No, we have not. And now it's going to be harder to win. Maybe not harder to get in the playoff, but harder to win. And so if it works out, awesome. But if it doesn't, you've just given yourself a bigger buyout. And we know there are plenty of big buyouts out there, and that never seems to stop anybody. But I think I would have waited one more year to see the product Oklahoma puts on the field in the SEC before I just would have decided to mound up to this extent. But Joe Castiglione's been a very smart AD for a long time, and he's not, to me, he doesn't tend to be like financially reckless. So, you know, it could be one of those things in Joe we trust if you're Oklahoma, but we'll see.
This does strike me as like a contract boost solely off of kind of for perception in recruiting, right? Going into the SEC. That's what this feels like. We're behind our guy as we move into the SEC, and we're going to show it publicly with this contract. And, you know, obviously the salaries of coaches in the Big 12 in the SEC are very different. And we're going to probably see some of this from those former Pac-12 schools who moved in the Big 10. Is salaries are going to rise to match their new league. And I think this is also what's happened here. And there was a riot. I can't remember who tweeted it, but it was an Oklahoma beat writer who tweeted something to the effect of, you know, this is kind of normal procedure. You can't have an Oklahoma coach be ranked 10th in salary in his league. And of course, my reaction to that was, why not? But anyway, that's here or there. But that's the sense I get.
I think he was going to argue that you can't have the Oklahoma beat writer get paid 10th. Right. Right. That's what I would go with. Well, look, I mean, I'm covering OU. I deserve 3rd highest. We should have sports writing.
We've just
deals.
We really lost with the coach and salary thing. We really lost the whole mantra of you got to earn it. Like there's no earning it anymore. It's wild to me. And we thought, and I still do think to a degree that this will slow, but you know, cases like this make you kind of scratch your head a little bit.
Well, and especially after going to Destin and hearing all the talk, you know, I always cost containment, oh, yeah. Cost containment. Yeah. Oh, well, except for this
see you
one.
In Naples at the Ritz. I mean, the money is just, these are just numbers at this point. But yeah, I my guess is you do this to, I mean, okay, they host Temple. Then they have Houston and Tulane. And I said it right, right? Did I say Tulane correct?
Yeah, they got.
I said Tulane correct. Yeah, baby. Yes, give me a. Where's my 6-year deal?
Give you a raise and extension, huh?
Tulane on the first hit. Houston and Tulane. Tricky. Tricky. Okay. Yes. Look, if you're paying the guy this much money and you're the OU Sooners, you had 3 straight top 10 recruiting classes. I'm not sure that's the measure anymore, but whatever. You should win these games. But Houston and Tulane are not easy. Both teams very, very good. Then you get Tennessee. They're coming for the big welcome to the SEC moment. It's going to be a big time game. Really interesting game. They're at Auburn. Then they get Red River. Then South Carolina at Ole Miss. The Maine Black Bears, second reference in this pod. Pretty good for big day up in Orono. UMaine, Orono. Then they're at Missouri, Alabama, at LSU to finish. And I feel like this extension is a little like, listen, we know this is going to be a tough schedule. You going to make the playoff off that schedule? Maybe, maybe not. We'll see. But he's our guy. And it sort of takes that, because like you're looking at Billy Napier, everyone's like, ah, he could be cooked. He could be this or that. And maybe he is down in Florida. But they have a super hard schedule. It's almost like you sit there and say, hey, look, we know the schedule's going to be hard. Now, he's a little different. Napier's, are they both going in their third year?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
I guess you what, that Red River victory last year paid off for Brent Venables. I don't know. Like I said, Castiglione's a very good AD, and this is their move. I don't. They got the money, I guess, but I think it just takes the speculation out if this kind of goes sideways. I don't really expect it to go sideways. I'm fascinated. I mean, how good do you think Oklahoma's going to be in the SEC? Like, they consistently have been as good as any program like ever, but. Yeah. This is different. Is this, can they do this? I don't 100% know.
I don't either. And I mean, I don't think we will know until we see. And I think you will need a special coach to be able to succeed and win at a really high level in the SEC, you know, the level where Oklahoma's accustomed to. And I'm not talking like the Bud Wilkinson level. That was something, or Barry Switzer, but can you win as much as Bob Stoops, who won a lot and did win a national title? I don't know. I think it's very much TBD, and they kind of got, you know, pulled along in the prop wash of Texas in making this move. And it's one of those where it kind of like UCLA pulled along in USC's prop wash. Be careful what you're getting into, because it's going to be much more difficult there.
I think we mentioned this, you know, in the pod before, but you always try to project what these new schools, how they will project in their new conference. And I, you know, what is the closest comparison to a team that's a program that's in that league already? And you know, Oklahoma, I think I've said it before, like Oklahoma strikes me maybe as like an Auburn type of, as far as resources and history and maybe how they project in the league. They kind of strike me as that, where, yeah, you could have, you know, 11-12 win team, maybe even play for the national title, right? But you're also going to have some dips and some lows, because maybe you don't quite have, you know, the resources of some others. It, you know, so they, if they project in the upper to mid tier of the SEC, maybe the top, I don't know, 70 percentile or so, that's coming. That's great and all, right? It feels pretty good, but it's coming from, you were the 95 percentile in the Big 12, right? You were the Big 12's Alabama. You're the Big 12's Georgia, sort of thing. So that's going to be that's going to take some getting used to. As Bob Bowlesby said, I've said on the show before, you know, the traditional winners in college athletics are going to turn into traditional losers, or at least not as traditional, not as winning as they're used to with this new realignment. And I think he's probably pointing to, he didn't say it, but I'm sure he's probably thinking of programs like Oklahoma, maybe even Texas too, maybe USC going to the Big Ten. I mean, I think he's probably, those are probably programs that are used to winning 8, 9, 10, 11 games a year on average, that are going into tougher leagues where winning 8, 9, 10 games is going to be much more difficult.
Well, I mean, we've said this in the past. Every program thinks they'll duplicate their success in the next place, You know, Nebraska obviously is a big example of that. But even some of the, you know, even some of the others that have made the move, and it's just like, you got to go to your new reality. You're no longer have all the resources. So we'll see. I'm Oklahoma to me is one of the most fascinating programs because they just, other than like a brief stint about 30 years ago, they really just have not had down times. And they have enough stuff there to be really good. They're not Nebraska. Oklahoma produces more players than the state of Nebraska. The state of Oklahoma, by jumping to the SEC, they have a little, even more, I'd say, separation for those elite players than Oklahoma State. They obviously have a massive brand and all that, but they're also just so close to Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, which keeps expanding north towards them. So you're a couple hours away from so many players. And playing for the Sooners up there would be a very appealing. It will remain very appealing, and so I think Oklahoma has a chance to remain extremely relevant. But yeah, the years where you just crank it out 10 wins, nobody really does that consistently. It's very, very hard to do. So, by the way, the heart.
Yeah, I concocted some formula back, I don't know, 15 years ago, maybe 20. Trying to figure out the all-time greatest football program, and I came up with Oklahoma because of the success over, you know, long decades. And this also, granted, was before Alabama, you know, was winning titles every other year under Saban. But, I mean, their ability to win across three or four generations really was a separator. And, you know, no, the fan base that was cheering on Bud Wilkins and Sooners is no longer alive, but the legacy of that has been handed down, you know, that they expect to win damn near every game. And there will be a readjustment, I think, of that expectation.
Pat, do you remember, I don't know if you were at SI, it was at least 3-4 years ago, so you might not have been there yet. We did we ranked the top 10 football programs historically in college athletic, college football. And, we each ranked and they were given points and we pooled them together. And then we did a total ranking of our averages. And I can't remember. I think Oklahoma was like real, like 10 or 9. And let me tell you, the Oklahoma fans did not take that well at all.
I bet they did.
I'm looking at this I mean, obviously, of the Wilkinson years, which is ridiculous, right? Yeah. There's a couple years.
55 game winning.
The immortal Gomer Jones didn't do so well for 2 years. They got him out of there. Jim McKenzie. Then they got Fairbanks. Then they got Switzer. Yeah,
Fairbanks did well.
Gary Gibbs, not as well. He was there 6 years. 1 year of Schnellenberger. And then Schnellenberger. I'm saying it wrong. 3 year John Blake experiment did not go well. 3-8, 4-8. That was the late 90s. Since then Stoops came in. Lincoln Riley. I mean, it has been has been a wagon ever since. And so it's a great place. I mean, we've all been there. It's fantastic. It's a great little town. Yeah, it's great. You know, there's so much there. And again, being close to and their recruiting presence in the Metroplex, like, yeah, you're leaving the state, but not really.
Not really. You know, it's like the state of Oklahoma is like an exurb of Dallas.
Yeah, like they're all Cowboy fans up there and all that. Like it really kind of is. And so it's like it's like Clemson and Atlanta. It's like, yeah, it's not in state, but it's close enough. So I would say that College Football Network's top 10 toughest schedules. They had some kind of SOS score, they called it. I don't know.
Dan, what is the College Football
Network? I don't know. It's a website that I'm citing. I'm citing as experts on this. See, and they have a formula, Ross. They have a formula.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to it right now. SOS score. Is there a Wikipedia page?
No, College Football Network.
Is it
network.com?
Okay.
I once wanted to call this podcast the College Football Radio Network. That was one of my
College Football Network is your source for the latest news, odds, rankings, and analysis of college football.
Hold on. Come on now. Sponsorship, or at least, you know, come on. Just handing out free. But anyway, Florida, I don't know. They got Oklahoma, number four. Toughest schedule. Who's to say no?
Who's 1, 2, 3?
I'm a little confused, though. Is this 2020?
Florida's got to be.
Wait, how is Florida's the toughest game? Oklahoma's toughest game is at Ole Miss.
USC's got to be up there.
Wait, I thought they were playing Georgia. No? Oh, they don't play Georgia. Alabama's not it?
No, they don't. At Ole Miss. I mean, at Ole Miss, probably the
this
highest
This is why
right
they're
now.
Better than me. I thought they played Georgia. Yeah. All right. Number one, Florida. Their SOS score is 28.17. Of course. Absolutely. I mean, yeah. Oh, why not?
I would put it at a 28.19, but
number two is Georgia Tech. Number three, Houston.
Georgia Tech.
Houston's toughest game is at Arizona. It should be at Oklahoma. They're going by like last year's rankings. All right, I'm starting to get.
We're down on the college football.
Shocking. We're questioning the whatever the hell it's called. Look, I've already forgotten. College Football Network.
Houston's toughest game is at Oklahoma. It's not at Arizona. Oklahoma's 4. Colorado 5. Their toughest game is at Arizona. I mean, what, Arizona Cardinals? Who?
Arizona.
Alabama.
USC.
USC's 8.
USC plays LSU at Michigan, Penn State at Washington, Notre Dame.
That 23.96. They're way behind. All right, forget it.
Boy, this is something.
Here
wow.
we go. It's Dan finds something on internet.
June 24th, dog days of summer, baby. We are here for you on the pod.
I don't know what it is. did you see this in exciting recruiting news? Juju Lewis, the exciting five-star commit to USC, who happens to be taking visits all over the country and videotaping the entire visit and taking pictures. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's tremendous. We got him he stopped in at different spots. He's at Colorado. They made him a Juju burger at the sink. Got his own burger made for him. Recruiting's so much better in NIL times. That would have been. Oh, can you imagine the heads exploding in Indianapolis? Yeah. Oh, these guys made
him. We made him the burger, but did he pay?
Did
for
he
the
eat
burger?
The burger? What if he doesn't eat the burger? Is it fry allowed? Yeah. Can have the burger, but
can
not
he,
the fry.
Can he have mayonnaise on it.
Instead, like these, the sink, right, Pat? That's like a big bar up there. That's an old bar.
Oh yeah. Right by camp.
The
right
fact
by
he
the
wasn't
stadium,
guzzling, he could guzzle like 17 pitchers at night, but he couldn't pose for a picture with the burger. At the sink. I'm pretty sure Colorado recruits have been going to the sink through the years, just like everyone else. Yes. Anyway, the sink smart enough to get in on the good juju, hashtag good juju. We want juju. Mm. Sco Buffs, Juju Lewis, just to get the publicity. And sure enough, 97,000 people saw their tweet of juju and the juju burger. But he was up at Colorado. And I mean, this is some pretty good. Juju Lewis puts out on his Instagram a picture of him wearing the Colorado uniform. Of course, they got to get their picks, even though I thought those are no longer allowed. What is that? Or they're trying to phase them out.
No, you just don't like. Yeah. I mean, they're trying to make it so, right. Because the staff didn't
all the violations left. Right. Yeah. No one wants to take. Anyway, someone took a picture of him. It's probably just him on his iPhone. He's sitting on a throne with the Colorado, a golden throne, with the Colorado Buffalo logo, CU Buff above him. He's in his uniform, there's a football at his feet, and Shador Sanders is standing next to him. He's just dressed normally. Looks like a college kid, but this outfit actually looks like it's probably cost like $2,500 because that's a problem. I don't know all the labels, but that looks pretty good. And he's basically dropping the keys to, who knows, probably a Lambo or something.
Shador drives the Bentley.
Shador. Sorry. My bad. Yeah. I would never put you. Whatever fancy. He's dropping some keys into Juju's hand. So it's like I'm handing over the keys to the Colorado Kingdom as you sit on this throne. Like, I'm here for it. I'm here for it. I don't know what this means. The kid's committed to USC. Committed. He's about as committed.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure USC feels really strong about the commitment at this point. Aziz, he was like, he was posing with a guitar at IU. I mean, he's been all over the place. But No, they. Every school has a throne now, right? Like,
for your
photo ops, the expense budget ad line there. Well, yeah, we have to have a throne. See, college sports is completely in perspective. There's nothing. Yeah, we need a throne for all our recruits for the visit.
Okay, are they going to get them? This is actually some, like, we criticize because he doesn't do any real recruiting. Coach Prime doesn't really do any. He did. This is some recruiting, at least.
Yeah.
The actual alleged
number one quarterback on campus.
I don't know.
Posing at the throne.
Seems pretty good. I don't know. All right. Maybe not. No one cares. I know Ross hates recruiting. All right. How about
hate is a strong word, Dan, but you're on the right path.
Let me go to we don't need a throne at Rutgers. Okay. We don't need a Rutgers throne. Rutgers is recruiting very well, for those of you that care. They're starting to land some guys, and I mean, this is pretty good. My apologies. I'm going to say probably your name wrong. It's spelled JA'ELYNE. Jalen? I don't know. Jalen? My bad. Matthews. There's an offensive lineman named Matthews up in Jersey. And love this guy. He commits to Rutgers. And the way he announces his commitment is by at his Tom's River North commitment ceremony. He stands there with his high school coaches, puts on a Rutgers hat. They all got Rutgers shirts, and he opens up a pizza box with a big R in marinara painted over the cheese. He committed via pizza slice. One bite, everyone knows the rules. Go to Rutgers.
That's some good New Jersey, New York stuff.
This is
right there.
Serious Jersey right here.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure we don't know what pizza place. See, these guys missed out.
Yeah, could have been great marketing.
Yeah. Game, huh? Anyway, good job. Well, Rutgers is doing a good job in recruiting, by the way. They're feeding really them pizzas. You don't need a keys thing. and finally, I don't know if you saw this video. It was right when Steve Sarkisian of Texas made the statement that NIL should be the last reason you pick a school. Somebody videotaped one of their immense recruiting trips where the players had to walk through a gauntlet of Lamborghinis to get to the building. You see that?
I love how you put that. The players had to walk through a gauntlet.
Well, they set up where you walk. Remember, right?
There you go.
There was a gauntlet of Lamborghini. Like, how do you get that many Lambos in one spot, right? You guys aren't into the recruiting stories this week. I'm dying here. No, Pod has hit the brakes.
No.
I don't like your energy, both of you.
I wanted to go back to Rutgers, but
all right,
changed
go ahead to Rutgers
on.
Then. What's happening?
Let's hear more about the marinara.
I'll take anything.
Four ESPN top 300 recruits committed to Rutgers. So, like, Schiano's getting it done there, but then the basketball program got like five-star top 10 guys? So I'm going to guess that the collective is in high gear at Rutgers.
Money rolling.
I don't know who's
NIL
behind
is terrible.
It,
but... They can get it through. I mean, they're buying pizzas.
Buying pizzas and perhaps other items as well. But, like, Rutgers is not known for recruiting in football or basketball, and all of a sudden they're killing it in both, which tells me Rutgers has adapted to the new era rather well.
Yeah, I think the basketball was sort of a less NIL than opportunity. They're going to go pro anyway. But this is sort of our example of, like, how do you, when you're Rutgers, okay, and you're facing basically your brand is facing a 50-year deficit of are you good, right? Should top recruits come here? Kenny Dillingham at Arizona State, he believes that the media sets the tone of whether a kid, like, the perception of the program is why these kids pick the schools, because they don't want to go back to their school or their friends and say, oh, I'm going to Rutgers. I could have gone to Ohio State. And I don't know that he's probably right. Kenny's a smart guy. And his things like, until you get the people to believe that it, first off, it doesn't really matter. But if you're a kid and you're going, I got an offer from Penn State. They just flipped a kid from Penn State, right? I got an offer from Penn State. I got an offer from Rutgers. I'm a football player. And everyone goes, well, you got to go to Penn State, right? Well, maybe you do, maybe you don't. They're both excellent places to play football, but maybe the best opportunity for you is at Rutgers, or maybe you like Rutgers better, or whatever it is. Maybe they're better pizza, whatever it is, closer to home. Why would you pick Rutgers over Penn State? Well, you can't overcome 50 years of that. That is ingrained in people, right? If you just meet some kid, oh, that kid's a really good baseball player. They got an offer from the, oh, wow. All right. You just assume we all have that sort of stereotypes in our head. How do you overcome it? It's not by building the same facility, which is a slow dollar use. It's what is going to, we'll outbid them. And Rutgers is picking their spots here. I don't know what's going on with the NIL, but they're certainly landing some kids. Yeah. They've got fans and they've got money. What they don't have is 50 years of, like, we weren't good in 1968.
Yeah.
I mean, they're surrounded by tons of population centers too, which should help all this.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. I mean, plenty of alums that work in important jobs about in the North.
Fan base too. Like, those guys are passionate at Rutgers, and they have very little to cheer about. I mean, it's easy to be like, we just read off the list of all those Oklahoma seasons. Pretty easy to be like an Oklahoma fan if you live in Oklahoma. Be like, yeah, we always win. Not so easy when you're that passionate about Rutgers. So,
no, a list of Rutgers seasons would be the anti Oklahoma. Just about. I mean,
yeah. Dan, do you have a fun little story to end the show? Because I have something for you.
Uh-oh.
I realize where it's
breaking Go news ahead. Too.
Really?
From the Huffington Post. I'll read the tweet.
I'm excited. This is I get to be the just
Philip Lewis of the Huffington Post. McDonald's is ditching its drive-through AI ordering system after too many customers wound up with totally incorrect orders, such as a handful of butter, hundreds of chicken nuggets, and ice cream loaded with bacon.
What?
That sounds pretty
AI
good.
Was doing a McDonald's order?
Yes, apparently McDonald's had been using its AI in ordering, allegedly.
What? So, I don't know. Like, they were taking the input from the order, and then, like, so somebody goes and, you know, yells into the microphone. The first thing you have to say is, no, I'm not using the app today. Mm-hmm. And then you can make your order. And then, but then they were botching the order.
Yeah.
Like, to the point where, if you're then the line cook or whatever, do you really say, we need 5 pounds of butter for this?
Like, McDonald's has been testing the voice automated ordering systems, AI voice automated ordering systems, at about 100 drive-thrus since 2021. And now they've decided to cancel because of these stories. It was first reported, the news, by Restaurant Business. And then it has disseminated to other outlets.
But, I'm confused. Was it they're trying to eliminate, like, the lady at the with the headset?
Yeah.
Yes.
Everything else is
McDonald's. McDonald's, just like the SEC and Big Ten, is barely getting by and needs to make some cuts.
I mean, what? I didn't think ordering at McDonald's was so complicated. We needed to bring in. I mean, they already simplified it with the number one, the number two. Everything's artificial at McDonald's. Might as well be the intelligence. I got to look more into this.
According to this story, lots of other chain restaurants are using AI. Checkers, Hardee's, Wendy's, Dunkin' Donuts, Taco Bell, they've all tested AI technologies in drive-thrus. Some have even been, this is fully implemented. Wendy's has began using AI to adapt their menu by implementing AI menu changes and suggestions based on things like the weather. I don't know.
Well, okay, so some of it is you got to know, like, it's basic stuff, right? Like, at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock dinner rush, just start cooking burgers, right? Like some of it's like, you don't wait. That was always McDonald's thing. So maybe when they're like, hey, it's cold out, they're going to order more coffee or like, but I don't get this. Yeah. Why would you get a bacon in a ice cream?
Well, the line at the end of the story ends with, chains have high hopes about AI, but the ordering systems haven't been as smooth or accurate as customers would hope. It's leading to a lot of grief in the drive-through lanes. Hopefully, the tech giants can work out the kinks in fast, because absolutely nobody wants butter in place of a Big Mac. There are some things that robots just don't understand.
Seems like a job for Grimace to sort out. He's not doing anything.
High-level meeting, Grimace and the Hamburglar, Mayor McCheese, at Mayor McCheese's City Hall office.
I don't know. All right. Well, good. That's our podcast. That's today's show. Let me recap today's show. I don't know. We'll be back later this week. Talk to you later.